So, forgiveness, it all starts with the hurt, right? We hurt someone or somebody hurts us. And the way I see it, we have basically two choices of how to respond. We can choose forgiveness, which we all know is the road we're talking about. It's the prosperous choice. We're in a prosperity series right now. This is our third week. I hope you enjoyed Reverend Catherine last week. I loved her story about the pigs, the three pigs. The series is called The Four Pillars of Prosperity Built on a Foundation of Faith. So just to catch some of you up, the first week we combined the foundation of faith and the very first pillar, vision. And then Catherine just talked about her own views on prosperity. And now we're back to pillar number two. And pillar number two, obviously, is forgiveness. So that first choice when we're hurt or we hurt someone else is to forgive. And the other choice is to retaliate. And that's pretty much all there is to it. Because retaliation can be a pretty wide swath continuum of different ways that we retaliate. We might think of retaliation as when, you know, we retaliate in violence, but violence can be a lot of things. It doesn't have to just be physical, right? It can be psychological, it can be emotional. And part of what we do when we withhold our love from one another is that we side on the side of separation. We're certainly not walking the path of divinity when we're in those places. And yet, we also are human beings, right? With tender, sometimes, feelings. And that's okay, too. Because forgiveness is a process. And so that's a little bit of what we're going to talk about today, is that process. One of the things we do when we choose retaliation is it's out of this idea of punishing another, right? That we're not going to forgive or that we're going to, you know, maybe be mean back or hurt back in some way, or strike back in some way. Or sometimes we do that to ourselves, right? We feel guilty for something that we did or said, and so we punish ourselves instead of working with this idea of forgiveness. So it always comes down to those two choices. It's really quite simple. And if we choose the path of forgiveness, it may be a process. It may not just be a one-time, easy, I forgive you, or I forgive myself. You know, the world's traditions, the wisdom of the world's religious traditions and philosophical traditions has forgiveness as one of its basic tenets, no matter where you look. The Buddha said, holding on to anger is like holding on to a hot coal with the intention to throw it at someone else, and guess who gets burned instead? Yeah. And Jesus, of course, said, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. Forgiving that really collective ignorance, right? So when you look around the world and you think, oh, what a mess. This is crazy. Why are we doing this to one another? You know, you can come back around to that. Spirit, forgive them. Forgive us. We know not what we do. I've carried that prayer into the wilderness with me before and given it to the earth. Forgive us. In this beauty, in this gift, we know not what we do. Confucius said, to be wronged is nothing unless you continue to remember it. Yeah, nice pithy piece of wisdom there, huh? And there's an Arabic parable that says, write the bad things that happened to you in sand, and write the good things that happened to you on a piece of marble. Isn't that nice? Yeah. Just a few pieces of the wisdom around the world. So what is it about forgiveness? So we get it, right? We all get it. This is a good idea. Seems like a good idea. We're on the spiritual path. Seems like we want to be forgiving people. And I think we do want to. And there are times when it just seems like it's really hard for us. And what is that? Well, part of it, I think, is that we think if we forgive someone else or ourselves, that it somehow lets them off the hook. It doesn't hold them accountable. Yet, guess what? We don't have to police the universe. Because there are spiritual laws that rule this universe that take care of all that. There are societal laws that take care of accountability. There are family rules and organizational rules and policies and group agreements that we make. So we don't have to worry about that. That's not ours to do in the process of forgiveness. Our process is to look inside and say, is there something that is blocking my good, that is blocking my light from fully expressing, that is blocking my love from flowing, and all the good that comes with that, my health and my wealth? Is there anything to forgive? Is there anything to let go? And sometimes it isn't until we get very quiet, like we did in the meditation, and somebody's face arises that we're surprised. I'd suggest to you a very simple practice that we can do, that at the end of your day, a time, I think a really nice time to do it is just as you're lying down to go to bed, just closing your eyes and dropping into your heart and asking that very same question: did I leave anyone outside of my heart today? And sometimes we'll be surprised. It's something that we forgot, some little thing that happened, seemed little, in the morning, you know, maybe with a family member or something at work or when we were at the store, some pretty harsh judgment maybe that we thought of someone or ourselves. We can include ourselves in that. And so then just being with that for a moment and blessing and recognizing and seeing that other being as just as divine, with the same kinds of needs and feelings and desires as you have. And just letting go. I really like to talk about, you know, the Buddhist idea of unskillful behavior. You know, that's all. Just there's times when we are unskilled in our behavior or unskilled in our words. It's okay, right? When we say it that way, it sort of makes sense to us, right? Oh, right, and I'm building my skills. And so that's a part of what kind of lets us let go of that. So sometimes we run into financial debt and we can actually see the connection with forgiveness. When I have an ebb in my finances, the first place I look is my checkbook or other ways of giving to make sure that I'm on track with my belief and my practice of giving 10% of my income to where I'm spiritually fed. And if I'm not on track with that, I get myself caught up. And the other place I look is dropping into my heart and seeing, is there something or someone I have not forgiven? Is there a forgiveness process that needs to be done here? And those two practices, I find, release the ebb and help me regain the energy again to let that movement flow with ease and with grace and with abundance. That's why forgiveness is such a key pillar to our prosperity. So some of you might know about radical forgiveness. I think a lot of people in this congregation particularly may know because Reverend Sheila, your former associate minister, was really well versed in this. She was a facilitator and one of the few in the world, actually, that's facilitating radical forgiveness now. Anybody familiar with it, Colin Tipping's work? A lot of you. Oh, great. Well, for many of you, this is going to be a short review, and for some of you, it's going to be new information. But I'd like to share with you the 5 steps of radical forgiveness, because I find it to be a really helpful process. And if you really like this and you want to work through it in a deliberate way, there are worksheets available at colintipping.com. Just go to Radical Forgiveness Worksheet. So the 5 steps are this. It starts with telling your story. And ideally, you want to find somebody who can hold a compassionate space for you and just listen to your story. You know, again, this is one where you can tell all the gory details. You know, don't worry about interpretation and judgment. You just tell the story exactly as it is. Or if you don't want to tell someone else or you don't have somebody else who you think can hold that kind of space for you, you can write it down. You know, just write out the story. Just tell the story. And as you're telling the story, it's likely that you're going to have some feelings come up. Or maybe as you finish the story, you're going to have some feeling. If you're really tuning in, there's going to be some feelings present. Step 2 is to feel your feelings. That seems like a really obvious one, but this one is a real big hurdle for a lot of us on the spiritual path. Because we tend to do that spiritual bypass thing. You know, it says, oh yeah, I got this down. And the spiritual thing is to just forgive. So I just forgive. I remember a man in my former congregation who I adored, and he was telling me a story one day, and he said, oh yeah, I forgave that a long time ago, something that happened to him in eighth grade. And I could just hear the seething anger and sadness and the pain underneath that statement. And I said, Randy, did you really forgive it? I think, you know, there might be something to look at there. And as we sat together in just silence and just holding the space, the tears began to come. And the recognition that there is a block in the way to my goodness. And by just speaking spiritual platitudes, we're not doing anybody a service. So the path is real, you know? The spiritual path is real. And I mean like getting real, like authentic real. Being honest, really honest about where we are and allowing ourselves to move through that with grace and ease. And we do when we allow ourselves to feel. The third step is one that I'm going to call upon a character from a television show to help me with that you might recognize. That's right. Anybody recognize? I don't have the detective hat on. Just the facts. You got it. Oh, wow. Here's some good radical forgiveness students in here. So the television show Dragnet, Sergeant Friday would say, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. And that's step three. It's collapsing the story. So now we go back to our first step of telling the story, and now we retell it just the facts. You know what's amazing about this? That story gets really short. And we recognize how much we author our own stories, how much interpretation is in there. And when we collapse it to just the facts, the energy is like deflating the air out of a balloon. The energy goes, and we can look at it just at what happened. The next step then is to take that collapsed story and reframe the whole story. So somebody once wisely said that life is 5% of what happens to you and 95% what you make of it. And the reframing process allows us to own the soul story, the prosperous story, the story that allows us to triumph and break through. And that's the story that we're rewriting, that we're reframing. And so when we rewrite that and retell that story, the fifth step is to integrate our new story. And it's a great way now to bring in the body to the mind-spirit connection and to allow ourselves to walk that story or move that story, maybe through martial arts or yoga, or you can swim it or walk it, but to allow that story to become a new cellular memory. You've replaced that old memory, that old tape that wasn't serving you and that block that you were living with. And you've opened up the way. And so as you move it, as you integrate it in this way, it will become a living, breathing part of you, this new story, this breakthrough story. So one of the stories of integration that I really like is Sebastian Mariquin's story. It really, in his story, it ended up being a documentary. So his story became a recorded story, and that was his integrated, reframed story. He was the son of Pablo Escobar, who basically controlled the entire 80% of the global cocaine market throughout the 80s, mostly. In 1993, Pablo was killed by Colombian police in a crossfire shootout. And his son, Sebastian, at first retaliated, actually. First, he chose choice number two. And then he quickly realized that that was not the path for him or for all those around him. And he went with number one, forgiveness. And the way that he went about this, because at that time he was exiled into Argentina, is that he wrote letters to his father's enemies' children. And he reached out and he said that he forgave them and he wanted to tell them a little bit about what his experience was. And he had hoped that they would meet with him. Well, the documentary maker, filmmaker, Nicholas Entel got wind of this, and he said, I would like to document this process, because this was huge for Colombia. I mean, everybody knew Pablo Escobar. Everybody knew about this violent retaliation cycle that was happening around drugs and violence and else, you know, whatever else was thrown into the mix. An idea of scarcity, really, right? That's what it usually comes down to. When there's violence, there's a belief that there's not enough, or some other belief, one of the other scarcity myths, more is better, something like that. Scrambling for what we think is not enough. And so in the story then, Sebastian went and forged these new relationships and went through the process. And one of the things he said about it in the end of this documentary process was that his greatest hope and now conviction that peace was possible was that arch enemies, next generation sons, could become best friends. And he became friends with those men that he had reached out to, the sons of his father's enemies. And the other important thing about his story and all of our forgiveness stories is that it's not just about us or even us and another person, because the energy that gets freed is for everyone to enjoy. So it's families and it's organizations and it's cities and it's the world that gets to live in a little bit more of that love and that compassion and that forgiveness and that prosperous, abundant energy, because we've done that work, because we've had the courage to do it. Robert Holden, the psychologist, has a great, I think, a really good definition of forgiveness. He says that true forgiveness is a willingness to change your mind and to believe, number one, that we are whole, and number two, that nobody and nothing can take away your wholeness. I mean, that's standing in principle, right? That definition is all about understanding divinity. Because it says I'm already whole, and so no one and nothing can take away my wholeness. And if I am to forgive, then I must be willing simply to change. Beautiful song. Ready for the change, to change my mind, and to let everything else, the good, come with it. So I have one final story that I'd like to share with you. And I don't think I've ever heard a story like this around forgiveness that's touched me as much, and I hope it does you too. I want to invite the musicians up to help me share this story with you. To begin to give you a little bit of background, this is a story from South Africa during the Truth and Reconciliation Committee Council gatherings that happened at post-apartheid. They may still happen, but I know early in the day there were a lot of these. And this is a story of an elderly black woman. I've never been able to find her name associated with the story, but it's a true story. And in the courtroom that day with the committee, she is facing the man who perpetrated crimes against her family. His name is Officer Van der Brock. And what Officer Van der Brock and the rest of his folks did was they came to her home when her son was 18, and they shot him at point-blank range, and then they partied while they burned his body. Years later, they came back for her husband. And after they took him, I think it was about 8 years later, they came back about midnight and picked her up and brought her to the site where his body was bound on an open fire, and they poured gasoline on him and started the fire and made her watch because of the color of their skin. Unfathomable. And just before her husband died, he looked at her and he said, "Forgive them." And she carried that in her heart. And now on this day, she's facing this officer and able to say what she would like. She says, "I want three things." First of all, I want Officer Vonderbrock to drive me to the place where they burned my husband's body so that I may gather up some of the dust there and give him a proper burial. Number two, I want him to know that he took away the only family I have. And so I would like for him twice a month, because I still have so much love to give, to come visit me in the ghetto so that I may be a mother to him. This is a true story. Gets me every time. And finally, she said, I want him to know that God forgives him, and I do too. And would somebody please help me across the courtroom so that he may really know that my forgiveness is real and that I may embrace him. And so as she's being led across the courtroom, Officer Vonderbrock faints. And somebody begins to sing this old familiar song that we're about to hear. And the entire courtroom joins in. I think we've just touched a little bit of how it might have felt in that courtroom that day. And now let's hear what it sounded like.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a soul like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to love, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. When we've been here 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we've no less days sing God's praise than when we first begun.
Everybody.
Amen.